Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namasami. So this is another talk. It's earlier than usual because of other circumstances. So it's an opportunity just for allowing some teachings to go into the brain, into the mind, to keep you going for the next couple of weeks while I'm on my retreat. And of course, you know, it's important to, if you ever are in a position of being a senior monk or a teacher, not just to teach through words, but to teach by example. In other words, to be honest, to be not a hypocrite. As you speak, so you practice. As you practice, so you speak. And it's important to put aside that time for your inner practice, to be able to take those opportunities which are afforded in monastic life to develop the mind. Because later on in life, when you get more busy or you get more sick, you know, you look back upon these days of health and supporting conditions and you think, my goodness, I may have wasted that beautiful, wonderful opportunity. So don't waste opportunities whenever they come. No, grab them. Grab the, not the grab the day, but grab the moment. And if you can grab the moment, it means that this moment is the most important thing in the whole world for you. And whatever you give importance to always will remain in your mind. It's sometimes you reflect on why does the mind wander off? Now, why do I get up from my seat when I'm meditating? Why do I go and so slack off and do other things? And you always reflect afterwards to use your inside wisdom. It's because, you know, what you were doing on that meditation cushion was no longer important for you. You didn't give it value. You thought it was worthless. And you thought that going and having a cup of tea or reading the book was going to be more useful for you. And so I often look to see what motivates me, what makes me do things, what's the cause and effect behind my actions. And with a little bit of mindfulness and reflecting upon what happened, you can actually see that whatever I think is most important, that's what I will spend my time doing. And if I really think it's more important to sort of go and build another hut, if I think it's more important, you know, to go and write another article, that's what I will do. And during this particular time, none of that is important. The only thing which is important is the practice of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, in order for you to get closer, if not achieve, this goal of enlightenment. So you have to give importance to what's really worth important, which what's really worthy. And that is a practice. But it's not just giving importance to the practice. It's like, what is this practice? What are we supposed to do when we're sort of sitting down and meditating? And even though that, you know, I teach every week about meditation and different aspects of meditation, different tools to use in meditation, different strategies to get the mind peaceful and quiet. One of the important things is to know what the purpose of this meditation is. It's something which has become clearer and clearer to me that when, you know, you're in charge of a monastery, what am I doing this for? What's the purpose of being an abbot? What's actually the purpose of building a hut? What's the purpose of having a retreat center? And always keep the purpose in mind, because when I keep the purpose in mind, what we're doing this for, it makes it very clear what's valuable and what isn't valuable. When we keep the goal in mind, the path becomes very clear. We're not quite sure where the goal is or what the goal is. Now, there's no real path there, that, you know, you don't know where you're going or why you're going or what's happening. And you can waste so much time that way. And of course, you know, the goal of this monastic life is nothing else but the end of suffering for the realization of Nibbana. So when you're meditating, you sit down, or when you're walking, what are you doing that for? It's for the realization of Nibbana. And that becomes one's goal. That becomes why one is doing things. I've mentioned before that sometimes goals can be counterproductive. If you have a goal of achieving jhanas, you have a goal of sitting the longest you've ever sat before, if you have a goal of pushing through pain, all those types of goals, that's just part of ego stuff. If you don't set the right goal, you'll find that the path will never be sort of accurate. It'll never be a good path. So the most important thing is, or one of the most important things, is to set a proper goal, first of all. This is supposed to be aiming for nibbana. So what is this nibbana we're supposed to be aiming for? Now, what actually is it? Once one understands a goal, then the path becomes very clear. And of course, one of the best definitions of nibbana is, or parinibbana especially, is the end of rebirth. So we're all doing this so we don't get reborn again. So this is our last life. So whatever you're doing, when you eat your meal, when you sort of go to the toilet, when you walk, when you sit, when you sleep, keep that in mind. I'm doing this to make this my last birth. If you keep that goal in mind, it sort of sets a whole scene, and it makes what you're doing either a stupid thing you're up to or a very wise thing you're up to. Because if you're eating just to enjoy yourself and get fat, if you're just sleeping just to escape from another hour, I still remember when I used to go to teach at Carnot Prison Farm over 20 years ago. There was an old saying in that prison farm at the time, I'm not sure if it's still there. They had so much free time that they would spend a lot of time sleeping. You know, even in the afternoons or Saturdays and Sundays, just to go back to wherever they were and just crash out and sleep. Because they used to say 1 hour of sleep is 1 hour off your sentence. 1 hour when you are not aware, when you're unconscious, means 1 hour when you're not cognizant that you're in a prison wearing these green clothes to show that you're a criminal. And you can understand that there was some sense to what they were saying. Because it was a very, very unpleasant place, or at least, you know, people try and escape there, so it can't be a pleasant place to live. That they wanted to escape through unconsciousness. So if you're sleeping, are you escaping because it's, you know, just too much suffering, just meditating and getting bored out of your skulls and nothing much to do? If that's the case, then, you know, you're just missing out the point of this. Because there's no real escape that way. You're just putting off the task, putting off the job. And you just have to do it sometime or later. It's just like having the toothache and putting off going to the dentist. It just gets worse and worse. So what are you doing this for? So if you are sleeping, it should be, you know, to rest the body so that when you wake up in the morning that you can be fresh, energized, and your meditation is going well. So you can practice your precepts, you can keep sort of right speech and right action. When people don't sleep enough, they get grumpy and sometimes they break, you know, their right speech or right action simply because, you know, they're mind is weak and their body is hurting because they're just tired and dull. So just sleep the right amount. So, you know, your body is rested, the mind is clear, so at least you can keep your precepts. And also that you can sit down in a comfortable body and you can get into some deep meditation. So, you know, the sleep is there as a support. I know that I've experimented with sort of going without sleep and just sleeping very little. I've told you about those early days in Thailand where you would stay up all night once a week. You wouldn't sleep for 24 hours or 36 hours sometimes. And yeah, you could do that and you could feel that just what a sort of tough monk you were. But it just really played havoc with your meditation afterwards. It took days to recover, you know, from that. It wasn't a middle path. It wasn't sort of a gentle path. It was just these bursts of willpower and energy. So, you know, I've done that and just it doesn't work. Sleep too much, sleep too little, and it doesn't help at all. So, you know, you look at your sleep, what's it there for? What's the purpose of it? And when you keep the purpose in mind, you know, it's for gaining nibbana. Then the whole thing becomes very clear what you're supposed to do. Without that purpose, you can waste a lot of time and get very confused. And it's the same, why do we keep precepts? Now, why do we restrain our speech? Why do we restrain our actions? Why do we spend a lot of time, you know, by ourselves and not with others? For the sake of nibbana. Because you know that one of the great, as I was saying, one of the great definitions of nibbana is is not getting reborn, and the cause of that is ending craving. You see, craving gives rise to rebirth, and so if we want to get enlightened, we have to somehow end this craving. And so we sleep to end craving, we eat to end craving, we meditate to end craving, we speak, we move to end craving, to end the cause of rebirth. And especially we meditate to end craving. And I love sort of remembering that when I meditate. I'm meditating for nibbana. In other words, I'm meditating to sort of eliminate this craving. And so whenever I see any craving coming up in my mind while I'm meditating, that's what I'm aware of, and that's what I find a strategy to overcome it, so the craving just vanishes. So basically, that craving is my enemy number one when I'm meditating. I'm very aware of it's an enemy number one, because I know the point of this meditation is to abandon that craving, to weaken it. And so when I'm even meditating, the meditation is not aimed for nimittas or jhanas. Its main goal, its purpose, is to diminish this force of mind called craving. And you can actually see it occurring, the craving to get a comfortable body when it's painful, or the craving to beat your records, or the craving to see how tough you can be with pain, or the craving to get insights, even these types of cravings. You know, you can notice these as what's going to create just more agitation, what's going to move you away from nibbana. And also that nibbana is this great sense of stillness, of emptiness, of extinction, of cessation, when nothing moves anymore, there's nothing left, which is another great idea to get in one's mind when one is meditating. You know, if nibbana is that incredible peaceful stillness, this is the peaceful, this is the highest happiness, nibbana, the stilling of all things, of all sankharas. Then when one gets a feeling for what that nibbana is, even if one might not know it totally, one gets a feeling for it, an understanding, this is when things disappear, when there's a stillness. Then the goal of the meditation is to become still, to allow things to vanish, to go into this great emptiness, to see sort of less and less, not more and more. And when I keep that in mind as my goal, again, the meditation is very easy, because my mind is a very clever, as long as it knows what it's supposed to do, it will usually do it. The point is that sometimes the mind hasn't got a clue what it's supposed to be doing. It doesn't know where it's supposed to go. And because of that, it just gets totally confused. And so you can end up, you know, wasting hours and days and months and years of your life not really understanding what this path truly is or what you're supposed to be doing. So tell your mind at the beginning of the meditation, do what I've called that programming mindfulness. Mind, during this next hour, you know, your job is to make sure that, you know, there's no craving, no wanting. So any sort of desire for anything whatsoever, okay, mind, you know that that's not allowed. Okay, it's going to hurt you, it's going to not be conducive to what we're about. So we make this agreement, doesn't matter what happens, if I fall asleep, if I am dull or restless, whatever, I'm just going to see if I can just notice craving. And whenever I see it coming up, have a strategy so it just disappears straight away. Now, one of those right efforts, that I notice this as an unwholesome or unskillful akusala dhamma, this craving, so I make sure I practice the four right efforts. If I see it in my mind, I abandon it, make sure it doesn't come up in the first place, develop sort of the wholesome qualities of non-craving, and maintain that beautiful mind of non-craving. And you find strategies to do that. It's very simple to find strategies once you have, you know, the right goal in mind, the right sort of, I won't even call it a goal, but like a direction of the mind. Of just no craving. And I tell you that it was a couple of years, I think it was about fourth, fifth, sixth rains retreat. That was my basic meditation. I used to do that a lot, just sitting down there, no craving, no craving, no desire, no desire. That was my main aim of the meditation. You got some very peaceful states that way. And also that you really diminished a lot of the defilements which are based on craving. You know, as soon as you saw craving coming up in the mind, you know, you could notice it very quickly. And like anything else, once you notice it quickly, before it really grabs hold of you, it's very easy to stop. You know, in the meditation retreats, I use that great simile of the snake. And that simile, for those of you who don't know it, was in Thailand in those early years. I mean, we were poor monks. I'm not just joking that, you know, he didn't have any sandals to wear. So he was always walking barefooted over the ground and didn't have batteries for the flashlight. And it was in a quite thick forest. This was Wat Pa Pong, before Wat Nanachat was established. It was a pretty thick forest. And so it's very hard to see your way back from, you know, the Dharma hall back to your hut in the evening. And there were snakes around. Worse than snakes, these Mot Lin, these black biting ants and centipedes. Scorpions weren't so bad. The centipedes were the worst. And, you know, this was a forest, it was a jungle, so these were all over the place. And imagine that was you. And it's not like the snakes in this monastery. The snakes are pretty few and far between in this monastery. I don't know if anyone's seen one yet, but, you know, usually maybe see one a year or two a year at most. But there you see, you know, one or two every day. They're all over the place in those days. And so it was really sort of really dangerous. Walking without a flashlight, without shoes, back through these jungle paths to your hut at night. But, you know, I never got bitten because I used that simile of the snake. I knew they were out there. I knew they were dangerous. So that was in my mind every moment as I was walking back from the meditation hall back to my kuti, my hut. I was on the lookout for these things. So any sort of dark shape on the path, I would jump over. Or I'd take another route. There's many routes back to your hut. And so I never got caught. Because I was on the lookout, I could see them before they were too close enough to bite me. And I used that simile for my meditation. All these cravings, if you're on the lookout for them, you program your mindfulness, set up the mindfulness. Look, mind, these are dangerous. They keep capturing me and biting me so many times. And if I'm really serious about this Nibbana business, if I really want to make the best use of my time here, I've got to avoid these. So if you set that mindfulness up at the very beginning, then actually you see these cravings come up. You see them before they get hold of you. You can stop them. It's very simple. It's only when you haven't got that mindfulness, and it's only because you haven't told your mind what to do. When you haven't got that mindfulness, these cravings come up. You don't really see them until it's far too late, and off you are, go in a fantasy or a dream or planning or whatever's going on. You haven't really seen what's going on. So to be that mindful, you have to tell yourself what's going to happen, what to do. You've got to set up the mindfulness. I call that the symbol of the snake, and it's very, very effective. But in this particular case, craving is what's going to cause rebirth. So I don't care what's going to happen in this meditation. This meditation is not for jhana or for nimittas. I just got to really look at this craving and just limit it, basically to starve it. So when I starve this craving business, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And I said that's what I did for 2 or 3 years, weakening craving enormously. But every time it sort of reared its head, I'd stomp on it and rear its head and stomp on it until it sort of was too afraid to really rear its head too often, get being stomped on. Not sort of with ill will, but just noticing it as it came up, and just when it's very weak, it's very easy to let go of. Take another path in your mind. And that meant the meditation started getting peaceful and starting getting very deep. And why? It wasn't because I was wanting the peace or wanting the depth of meditation. It was because I understood that this whole business, the whole purpose of it, was to make sure I don't get reborn anymore and to let go of the cause of that rebirth, which was the craving. So that became my main enemy and I stopped it. You can actually stop it in the meditation. So you can have many, many minutes, moments, hours sometimes, when there's not even a movement of the mind to crave anything. And you can imagine what happens then. When there's no craving in the mind starts to slow down and stop. That simile of Ajahn Chah, which is one of the most important ones, which I heard when he said the mind is like a leaf on a tree, it only moves up and down, it only flutters because of some external agitation, in that particular case the wind. If you make sure there's no wind, the leaf moves less and less and less and less and less and less until it finally comes to a stop. I understood that simile, the leaf being the mind, the wind was craving. So as long as I could keep craving off my mind, then I knew my mind would move less and less and less and less. And I realized that was a way to stillness. If I wanted to get the mind to be still, I couldn't hold it still. No longer if you wanted the leaf to be still, to hold it still. No, no. Why does the leaf move? The wind. So stop the wind. Don't hold the leaf. Why does the mind move? Don't hold the mind. Stop the wind, the craving. And then the mind becomes still. There's a very great insight there. Not because it was just something you could write about in a book and just tell your friends and how wise you were, because it actually worked. It started getting into some very powerful deep states of meditation. And you can understand why. Not only did it work, you could see the physics behind it, the cause and effect behind it, exactly as Ajahn Chah would say. So you saw that craving very quickly, you let it go, and of course the more you let it go, the easier it was to let go. It's just a training of the mind. The mind is like a creature of habit. If you allow it to sort of go off into these cravings again and again and again, it just gets used to that and becomes second nature, and off it goes. It's just like training a cat or training a dog. And that's what the mind is like. So if you train it to sort of have less and less craving, it just doesn't go to craving anymore. And after a while, just these things just don't turn up in the mind. And you do need to train the mind. That's why that great saying of that little novice who saw the irrigators channel the water from one paddy field into another. He saw the archers, they used to get the wood, and by heating it you could make that wood perfectly straight. And then he saw that how they could straighten the arrows and how irrigators could channel the water. And he got the insight, maybe I can train my mind as well. And he did train his mind, he became an arahat. So, you know, the mind can be trained. It's like how to train it. And training it through willpower obviously will not work. And people try that way, and that's why it took a Buddha to become enlightened. And see, you don't train the mind by willpower, you have to use a lot of wisdom power again. And this is one way of doing that. Notice what the purpose of the meditation is, because it's in the context of becoming enlightened, it's not a goal in itself. The whole purpose of meditation is to become an arahat, to end rebirth, to parinibbana. So understanding what the main goal is, see if one can lessen craving. So that becomes the main object. Not to get still, not to get nimittas, not to get jhanas, but to end craving. And that becomes a beautiful goal. And it means that sometimes you're meditating there and you lose it. You know, you think, oh, I'm going to get a jhana now. I'm going to go for a nimitta now. Craving, craving, craving comes up, the red bells, the alarm bells. Stop it. Let go of craving. Because I don't know how many times I've said, whenever you try to get jhanas, there's no way. When you try and get nimittas, when you aim for them, no way. Simply because it's more craving. So put the main goal at the front, you know, to nibbana. Understand that's ending craving. Stilling all the sankharas. Sabba sankhara samatha is a simile, it's one of the descriptions of nibbana. Sabba sankhara samatha, to quietening, quelling all of the sankharas, especially this will, this doing thing. And if you keep that in mind, that I'm meditating to still all these sankharas, all this will, all this doing, all this going, all this craving business, keep that in mind, that's the main purpose. And all the other landmarks on the path, they come in their natural order automatically because you set the mind in the right direction. Beautiful breaths and nimittas, they come of a natural course. The jhanas come, incredible insights come, simply because you set the mind in the proper direction. You understand what it's really there for. And therefore, it works. And it also means that you know what the obstacles are, what sort of causes this rebirth, this craving. And you can actually see it even more deeply as you go into this meditation. See, all this craving really is, it's just a movement of the mind. Now, when you have craving, it moves the mind, and the movement of the mind is more craving. And yet you look at this desire and this craving and this wanting. It's just a stupid outflowing of the mind. The mind has enough peace and happiness if it can just go into itself. But when it sort of starts going out, that going out somewhere is craving. It goes out because there's a wanting, a delusion that if you go over there, if you get this, if you get rid of that, then that's important, you find some happiness, that's valuable. And so you take again the value away from anything else, anywhere else, other than right here with what you have. Everything else has got no value at all. And the old saying, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Now this stupid old mind right now, in this moment, is worth much more than any fantasy or dream of jhana in the future. So if you sort of sacrifice this little moment you have right now, thinking you're going to get sort of something much more valuable in the future, you've lost the path. Bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. What you have right now in this moment is the most valuable. Any fantasy, dream, expectation, hope of something in the future is worthless. So put the worth into this moment, into what you already have. This is valuable. This is where Nibbana is going to happen. This is where meditation is going to occur. These are where jhanas come from, right now in this moment, not anywhere else. In the past or in the future, not the next moment, not 5 minutes, not tomorrow, not next year, but right in this very moment. This is the only important thing. This is the only valuable thing, right here, right now. You can see what I'm doing here, brainwashing you not to neglect where you are for some promise of something better. The promise of something better is called craving. And so when one's supposed to stop in that craving, just take the value away from what's going to happen tomorrow or what's going to occur sort of next week and put all the value on where you are right now. This is the most important. As I mentioned in one of the talks a couple of weeks ago, all that future and past is unreal. The only reality you have is now. This is the Dhamma. This is the only place Nibbana can exist. This is the Tripitaka right in this moment. This is the teaching of the Buddha right now. Just pay attention to it. Go into it. Listen to it. There you will find all the jhanas and nibbanas and everything else. So when you give this very moment its true value, no matter sort of what its effective quality is, if it's painful, if it's unpleasant, if it's dull, if it's sort of, you know, not as you would like it, doesn't matter. Just it's worth more than anything else. So stay with it. And because you give it more worth, what you're actually giving worth to is letting go, is stillness, is kindness. Open the door of your heart to this moment. You're giving value to non-movement. And instead, you're developing this beautiful stillness. It is another name for non-craving. Stillness, non-movement, non-agitation. Craving is just the way we regard. It's another sort of word for the movement of the mind. And of course, that movement of the mind just keeps on going, going, going. It creates a rebirth. It is the perpetual wandering of samsara. And you can say samsara, this wheel of rebirth, you can actually see it right now, how it works, because you're always moving, never being able just to stay still. Not even for a moment. And the goal of the meditation to end rebirth is to have that stillness, to understand how to be still. So you're not going anywhere, you're just being in this moment, absolutely still. And you understand, in those deep moments of stillness, you understand how rebirth is ended. How can there be rebirth when there's no movement left? When you're not creating anything more. All movement, all craving is creating things. And gee, what do we create but just more of a mess? So instead of creating more messes, we go the total opposite direction of just being in this moment, accepting it for what it is, no craving, making that our goal. And you can see this is a weird idea of a goal, because most people think goals are somewhere in the future. Our goal is, this is where I'm going to get to. I'm going to strive, I'm going to struggle, I'm going to work hard, so I get to this place somewhere in the future, maybe only a moment or two in the future, but sometime I'm going to get Nibbana, sometime I'm going to get Jhana, sometime, only 1 month left, I'm going to get at least a Nimitta. And all of that is missing the point totally. It just creates you more suffering. And you should have seen that by now. 2/3 of the retreat is already gone. How far have you got? Are you satisfied yet? Are you only 1 month to go? Are you going to be embarrassed after 1 month and people say, how did you go on your retreat? What happened in your 3 months when you go home and see your boss or see your husband and said to you, what did you get out of 3 months coming to this monastery? Just put on a few extra kilos, that's all. So it's embarrassing, isn't it? But be careful of that idea, because that will just get you into more craving. This is not goal, is not something for the future. The goal is being right in this moment. It's a sort of a goal of no goals, because most goals are outside of you. It's a goal coming in the opposite direction, going inside, going into things, not onto things. That simple change, you know, of wording meant, again, a lot to me in my meditation. I don't go on to the next stage of meditation. I never go on anywhere. Going on and on and on and on is samsara. It's going in. Because when you go in, that's when the movement stops. You go into this moment. You go into the present. You go into the breath. You go into the nimitta. You go into the jhana. It's always going in. So you never sacrifice anything you have. You never sort of want to move anywhere, because you know just the place where you can get to the end of suffering is just going right inside whatever you experience right now. And you know why that works, because when you go in, you're totally going against this craving, which always takes you on, out, anywhere else. Going into things is just what happens when you're still. You just watch something and you go deeper into it. And whatever you see now, you just go deeper into that. I used to, at my retreats, just hold up something like a cup and ask people, what do you see? What is this? Cup. Keep on looking. Keep on looking. Keep on looking. And it's a nice exercise for people who don't know what insight truly is. Because they, first of all, when they do these words, cup, when they do a noting, all they're really doing is repeating old words which they've heard before. And just that word, cup, is that the same as that thing you hold up? Of course it's not. It's much more than the word cup. You give more words, ceramic, or big, or small, or whatever, blue, or white, or red, or when all the words stop, then that's you get rid of all this rubbish stuff, the words. And then you just notice it. So you tend to actually to go into it. And you start to see incredible, amazing things in it. That's when I say when your meditation gets very strong, because you know how to stop and be still, it's amazing just what you can look at. Hopefully during this retreat, some of you anyway, have been able to actually to look at a flower right now on the everywhere in this monastery. And just stay with one flower. One petal of that flower for 5 or 10 or 15, 20 minutes, just staring at it and just not being able to finish with what you see in it. 10, 20, 30 minutes, you just find your mind going deeper and deeper into it and exploring it and never actually finishing. It's amazing when you get to that degree of stillness and you see insights just into a petal of a flower just explode. You never believed there could be so much in something so simple. You never believe that Nibbana is right in this moment. And when you understand what you're talking about there, not only does it become beautiful, incredible, and sort of mind-blowing, it means you understand what happens when you stop all this craving, when you stop looking outside to a goal in the next moment, to a goal in sort of the next week, to a goal in the past, to a goal outside the present moment, outside this body, outside this mind, outside this moment. But you sort of look right what you've got. And that is precious to you. Again, what is really precious and valuable is what the mind will stay on. If the goal in the future, if your idea of jhanas is more important to you, then you go off into the future. Remember, it's just an idea, it's a fantasy, it's a dream. That's not the real jhanas. The ones you're aiming for are not the real ones. The real ones are what happens when you stop and do nothing. When you just stay here, and no craving, no movement, and you just watch this mind vibrate less and less, like the leaf slowing down. And you just sit here with your eyes closed, valuing this moment, and just see the mind just diving into it. 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, and you're just amazed at what you can see in this moment. Incredible beauty. Nimittas like you've never seen before. You can't see them before. It's just totally in the present. Not even being able to give them a colour or to give them a shape, because it just those things just don't apply. Deep, deep, deep inside into these incredible jhanas, which is so hard to describe. You don't need to, you just go deep into these things. What's happening? The leaf is slowing down and stopping. And you notice, either before the jhanas or after the jhanas, these are all coming about by no craving, by stillness, by not having goals outside this moment, but by just being able to value this very, very moment, knocking craving on the head whenever it comes up. Nimitta's about to come up, bang, bop, that whole thought just vanishes immediately. Until the mind is just so absolutely still that these things just happen. And of course, you don't do it. The reason you can't do it is that doer, which is another manifestation of the moving mind, the mind's not moving anymore. It's just still, it's just going into itself. It's not moving to the left, to the right, above, below. It's just staying absolutely put. And you're realizing what this nibbana is and how it's achieved. It's the goal is to end samsara, end this wandering, end rebirth, end the cycle. The wheel's got to stop for it not to go round. So the wheel is stopping, stopping, stopping. Nothing is moving. And you actually still see, there's a great insight, it's only in stillness that rebirth can end. You get so still that nothing moves. And again, as I've mentioned in many talks, the sign of stillness is a vanishing. That's the other way I say about going inwards. The coarse vanishes, leaving the refined. And then the refined vanishes to reveal the super refined. And so it goes on. Experience is a mind which goes in. As the coarse stuff vanishing, stage by stage. Really, there's no going inwards or going anywhere. It's just the way the mind perceives this. It's just the mind being still, because craving has been abandoned. Craving has been looked upon as being useless, as being enemy number one, and stillness is valuable. So all this striving, all this wanting to get somewhere, all this craving, all these you know, worldly goals of trying to get somewhere, do something, planning and making things happen, you've realized that that was the problem to begin with. You get that degree of insight, and I call that wisdom power. You know exactly what you need to do, which is stop all that stuff and value just being in this moment. And again, no matter what this moment is, you know, I've got an old body, I get tired, I have to do things, and when I start meditating, look, sometimes I start behind the eight ball. you know, much worse than you guys because you don't have to do as much as I do. So when I start my meditation, sometimes I'm tired and achy and the mind is not sort of bright. But I know exactly what to do with it. That's my advantage because I've been doing this for a long time. Just sit there and just be still with it. Don't crave it for to be anything different. And even though the mind at the very beginning is not sort of is hard and it's dull and it's not sort of bright and beautiful, I value it. This moment, this mind in this moment is very, very important. So I'm not trying to get rid of it at all. And when I keep the mind like that, I just value it. This mind as it is. Many other people won't value it. They think it's dross, it's rubbish mind. But no, I will value it. As it is in this moment, this is the most important. Because I value it, it stays. Because it stays, it settles. Because it settles, the course of parts just vanish. Because the course of parts vanish, it appears that it brightens, becomes more malleable, the mindfulness becomes more sharp, I can let go of craving so easily, and it just goes deep and deep and deep into these stages of meditation. Not stages which I aim for, because the goal is not to get onto the next stage. The goal is not to get jhana. The goal is not to get insight. The goal is not to get nibbana outside of this moment. The goal is to get nibbana in this moment. So this moment is crucial. It's valuable. This is my vehicle. This is the bus to nibbana. This is Buddha air. Right in this moment, I just stay on this moment, stay on this Buddha air. And of course it just takes me to the goal. And this is actually how we meditate. So the craving is the problem. That's why the Dhammacakka Sutta, that's the second noble truth. That's why I've said before, second noble truth meditation leads to suffering. You crave, you want, and you just get so frustrated. You know, you just try, and some of you try so hard. And I'm in awe of sometimes how hard people try. Totally stupid, but I'm still in awe just that you can actually do that. And think, oh, come on, guys, there's a much nicer way, the peaceful way, and the way which actually works. And it's a gentle way, because you see in the time of the Buddha, you got all sorts of people became enlightened. All these, they weren't these sort of hard nuts. You know, these guys, the high achievers who would just work and strive, and you know, the tough guys. In fact, all the tough guys I saw when I was growing up in Thailand as a monk, they're all the ones who just, you know, got disrobed. You know, this is not like a tough guy path. This is a wise guy path. I mean, a wise guy, not in the sort of the Western way of looking at wise guy, but the smart meditator's path. So just, you know, being tough and just, you know, sitting through pain and just hour and hour and hour and hour and hour, just seeing how many hours you can do. It's important to spend time meditating, but quality is more important than quantity. So you understand what you're doing or why you're doing it, and you use that wisdom power, and you find just craving is the enemy. Stillness is the goal, is a sub-goal to get this nibbana, the end of all... of all rebirth, the stilling of all will, all sankharas, so that everything disappears. And also just the bliss of it, because when you really get into this, oh, it's great stuff. You really just have just a huge, beautiful, brilliant time. It just can't be better. When you start getting into that, and I always call it that tipping point, as you say, you start getting into the beautiful breath, when it starts really sort of getting into ecstasy states, oh, then you're off, well done, off you go. And I'm really, really happy for you then, because you know exactly what's going to happen, you just really get into it. It's not through craving you get ecstasy. The more craving, just the opposite direction, through stillness. So just being in this moment, or as I say, just unwrapping this moment. The ecstasy, the jhanas, everything you ever want in life is right in this moment. Right now, this very moment you're actually in right now. And this crazy, stupid mind, you think you're hopeless, you can't get anywhere. No, right in this very moment, right now, in the middle, is nibbana, is nimittas, jhanas, the whole works. So value this. It's the craving, the promise, the delusion of Mara, who comes along to the Bodhisattva and said, "No, I can make you a wheel-turning monarch. You can do so much good for the world. Just strive. Just do something. Please, do a little bit, please." And as soon as you do something, as soon as you're into controlling, then you're under the power of Mara, the controller in chief. But once you stop controlling, you stop that craving, you stop that movement of the mind, you stop that wind which keeps agitating the mind and stops it going to its stillness. Till you can do that, you'll always be frustrated. You'll always be doing Second Noble Truth meditation. Craving leads to suffering. But one day the penny will drop, as they say. You sit there for one reason or another. Sometimes amazing, sometimes because nothing else works. They try all the other stuff which you're told not to do, first of all, before you do what you're supposed to do. And after a while of so much suffering, you just, "Oh, what the heck, I'm going to let go." And then it starts to happen. And then you always come up and say, "Ajahn Bhav, it works. Ajahn Bhav, it's so lovely." He said, "Of course, stupid. How many years have you been in this monastery? How many times have I told you this?" But it's still nice. I say, "Okay, well done, stupid." "At least you've done it now after all these years wasting time." So it's still very good. So well done. And then you get know what peace is. Know what stillness is. Know what ecstasy is. Know what sort of the end of rebirth is. That really sort of blows you away. You understand why we have monasteries, why we have robes, why we have Buddhism. So it's a beautiful thing to do. End craving. So don't use craving to end craving, because that just makes more craving. I know that Ananda said that once, but you know, it's a very dangerous path. So don't sort of try and blow that leaf to stillness. Just stop blowing. Just allow the mind to be still. And just enjoy it all the way. And you realize that this is the whole purpose of this life. To get so still that you vanish. And that you can know that there's no more rebirth for you. And just what a huge relief. You look out there and just all the places you can get reborn. All the different ways you can get reborn. And just like that little rabbit, just minding its own business. Rabbits doesn't know these cars moves. Just underneath there, and the car moves and breaks its leg. Just karma of stupidity. And so many times you get your leg broken, your heart broken, frustrated, angry. It's just life being life. So just see if you can make an end of all this once and for all. That's why we're here. And there's many, many seconds left. So many moments. So you've got plenty of time to stop doing things, to stop going places. Stop craving for things. And just see this mind just come to a halt. To stop. Once and forever. That's the talk. Very good.
Patipano Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghaṃ.